Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Four Podmen with me, Ian the Dynamo Kelly, the shopkeeper Niall Hogan, the mighty Carl King Woe, and our brand new official member, back once again, the Journo, the journalist, whatever you want to call Dara. Dara,
hey guys,
welcome
how's it going?
To the show. Officially, you're officially the fourth Podman now.
Welcome home.
Happy to be a part of it.
You've lived here forever. You've always lived here. So, welcome aboard, Dara. Good to have you in. Lads, obviously, everybody listening now will realise we are not in our usual location of the fine shop that is WrestleMania. We are on Skype. We're having to use the wonderful world of the intranet to record this today because Carl's coughing, and we know what Carl's always coughing.
Yeah, so.
We had to keep a bit of a social distance on this one today, lads. How are you all getting on during this absolute mental time?
Well, I'm doing all right at the moment. Everyone is, they're all stir crazy, wanting to get out and do shit. But I mean, sure, I'm back at work tomorrow, so it's all the same to me.
Yeah, I haven't stopped working, so the internet doesn't stop, so either do I. I have to say, though, one thing we could have done is, if we had done this on Zoom, in the background, we could have had a picture of WrestleMania, we could have had a background behind us. CGI in the background.
Anyway. Well, there's a plug for Zoom. So yeah. Next time, guys, anyone listening to this one, we're going to learn how to use Zoom. Dara's a little bit more technologically advanced than us so far. Still learning on the job for me. But here, guys, I'm doing an online course and all this stuff at the moment, seeing as we're all not working, so... We'll get better. We'll get better.
There you go.
And Noel, the shopkeeper, how have you been?
Yeah.
You've had the shut shop.
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, we've kind of had the shut shop until the 19th. So kind of just working through it at the moment through Facebook and stuff like that and getting stuff out to people through postal orders and all that kind of stuff. So not too bad. Still working away. Just the location's different, but the business as usual.
That's it. And obviously, we'll, the wrestling shop, WrestleMania, is obviously a sponsor to Dynamo's Dozen. And obviously here, it is what it is on here. So if you need to get in touch with anything from WrestleMania, they are open for business. So just go onto the Facebook page there at WrestleMania, send them an email, send them a mail, and they'll be able to hook you up. Or if you don't know, go to the Dynamo's Dozen page and send us a mail through that, and we'll get it onto them as well. So.
Same
business
here.
As usual.
Yeah, same here. If any of my listeners want to catch up on WrestleMania, let me know and I'll hitch us up as well.
Awesome.
Cool.
So it is business as usual for us too. We weren't going to, there was no COVID 19, 20, 21, or 22, or any number that was going to stop this, what is the Champions League of wrestling podcasts. So I thought of that one there a little while ago and I had to chime it in while it was fresh in my mind. So lads, obviously the vote again was a little bit tighter this month actually. The votes we gave was factions through the history of wrestling down through the years. We had some great factions. And then the other option, of course, was the Monday Night Wars. And the Monday Night Wars won not by many this time, just by a little under 10% all in all. So, but thanks everyone again who votes. We had more votes this month than last month. So,
they were both two strong subjects as well. So,
yeah, very much so.
Doesn't surprise me that there's that like interest in both. Like, everybody loves factions and everybody loves the Monday Night Wars. It's kind of like picking your two favorite kids, right?
I think
probably the beauty of picking Raw versus Nitro is you get a little bit of faction in there anyway.
Yeah,
this is very true because factions obviously were such a huge part in the Monday Night Wars. Noel, I guess you're usually our stats man anyway. So do you want to maybe start us off and roll us in, take us back to I guess where it all started in probably 1996 if we're being realistic, is where it kind of really kicked off.
Yeah, well, I just sort of picked out some sort of moments or key moments or whatever you want to call them to sort of refresh everyone's memory and maybe have a chat about them.
Yeah.
So if you want to delve into them straight away, we could start like for Nitro, we looked at sort of Luger arrives. We looked at Arn gives up his spot. Yeah. Medusa trashes the gold, obviously. It's a big one. Goldberg winning the gold. DDP takes out the NWO. The excellently executed Goldberg. And then we had Stinger Royals by helicopter. And then we had, they got baseball bats, the cowards. Sting's a free agent. And you want a war. Which was obviously speaks for itself. So they were sort of the key points from Nitro. Do you want to delve into any of them first before we touch on Raw?
Dara, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, like I think the only thing that we haven't talked about there is maybe the move to live television. The forced Nitro. You know, they're two massive ones to have. Another thing to talk about, the obviously the 84 weeks that Nitro will be Raw in the ratings. And then, you know, kind of off that back, maybe the night that it kind of changed where Mick Foley's title win was spoiled on Nitro. So there are some ones that I would really add into as, you know, key turning points in the on the WCW side of things in the war. Like.
And I suppose Hogan arriving as well and Hogan turning heel.
Yeah, that's another one. Like, how can you forget that one, you know?
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, how far are we going to go? Are we going to go all the way up to the decline in 2000, or are we going to leave that for another day?
No, I think we'll start there on the point you made there on obviously Hogan turning heel. Now, obviously that was on pay-per-view, Bash at the Beach, probably the most famous pay-per-view. One of the most famous pay-per-views of all time now, just for that very moment. But the key to that pay-per-view, even though it wasn't a Nitro, was everybody tuning in the next night to Nitro to see what just had happened. You know what I mean? And that kind of was what really put the rocket ship under WCW, I think. And in the weeks that followed, because I actually only went back maybe a year or so ago, and when I had a bit of time, I was able to watch kind of all the Nitros and then the pay-per-view and then the Nitros and then the pay-per-view, thanks to the network, you know. And it did seem like, I mean, the reason Nitro, I believe, at that era was starting to pick up a lot more momentum was that even though the show all revolved around Hogan and the NWO taking out WCW, was the fact that their 2-3 hour show was filled with great matches in between. Do you know what I mean? People were getting to see these new, younger superstars, younger wrestlers, I'm going to say. I'm not going to use the word superstars. The Guerreros, the Benoits, the Jerichos, the Malenkos, you know, Steven Regals. You know, WCW still had a lot of the old Mid-South kind of stuff, like the Best of Seven series. So you were looking at stuff like Benoit and Booker T and the Best of Seven series every week. And you were really kind of building a lot of they had their characters on TV regular enough that you really got to know them. Do you know what I mean? And they didn't necessarily have to be involved in promo battles just to kind of get themselves over. The work in the ring was getting them over. Jericho, you know, only needed maybe 10 seconds of throwing a tantrum to kind of get to know what kind of character he was. So he always looked forward to seeing what he was doing. So I think Nitro was so innovative in that sense, and you have to kind of tip your hat off to Bischoff and, of course, Kevin Sullivan, the booker, for the way they'd done that, even if it was purely by accident, bringing a lot of those Lucha stars and the Japanese over. I think that's really what set Nitro apart from Raw, other than Raw's, say, main 2 or 3 storylines, in my opinion. What do you think?
They also introduced, like, they had a great cruiserweight division.
Well, that's kind of what I mean, kind of what I was off the back on. Yeah. Rey Mysterio,
and they sort of they sort of broke down that barrier, that big man mentality barrier then, you know, and stuff like that, which was really great to see.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's funny, I don't know about you guys, but have you actually went back to 1996 and watched any of the work with Guerrero and Rey Mysterio? The size difference compared to 2002 is crazy, isn't it?
Well, they were cruiserweights. Like, you know, they
really legitimately were.
legit cruiserweights, you know, and it was a different kind of different style, different mentality. You know, they were in that kind of in that bracket. Like I remember, because I was 10, 11 during this, and I was lucky enough to go to America a lot when I was younger. So that's how I started watching WCW, because I was in America so much and I was aware of it. And I had family that introduced me to wrestling, and that's how I kind of got into it. But one thing that I always liked about WCW, I was a WCW fan, like hardcore, well, except for Hogan, because I never liked Hogan. But I just never really liked Hogan ever. But and that was one thing that was great, because as a kid, you're literally seeing superheroes, you know, doing this mad stuff in the ring, you know. And it was the first hour of Nitro, before they did the recaps and stuff like this and Into Thunder, they would really have like a cruiserweight block. So you'd be able to go in and watch fantastic wrestling. The midway would kind of be your mid-tier storylines. And then near the end, you'd have your NWO, Hogan stuff, you know. And the way the shows were like laid out, there was a logic, up until there wasn't, there was a logical progression for everything. Like you had your, it was pretty much for people who've never seen it. Imagine 205 Live before Raw. The 205 Live being the first hour of Raw. That's what it was like.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
That's exactly what it was like. And that was kind of the feeling you got. And it was just something you weren't getting on in WWE at the time. And even when they brought in the light heavyweight division, it always felt like a cheap knockoff of it, which it was. So that was one of the things that they had. They had from a match, because like, I love the Attitude Era, don't get me wrong, but the actual match quality never really matched what happened in WCW until your Benoit's, your Jericho's, your Guerrero's came in to 2000. That's when the work rate really kind of picked up and it kind of got better. Sorry for using the word work rate, but there is no other word to use.
No, you're 100% right. Like, you know what I mean? 100%, yeah.
And that was it. You know, you watched WCW for wrestling. You watched WWF for storyline. And that's kind of the best way to think about it. And if you go back and watch it, that was a strong point. And then when they kind of swapped over and you had those guys leave, and that's why WCW was hurt so much around 2000, 1999, they moved away and completely went the other way, bringing in Russo and stuff like this, and the wheels just fell off. The talent wasn't there.
Yes, 100%. I mean, it just in terms of, you know, I was the same. I mean, WCW, I had watched WCW, as I said on previous episode, back in like the early 90s. But it was just, you know, when that would have been when Bischoff, I suppose, just took over, when it was in the Disney Studios, you know, in Orlando. And I was watching it then, and I loved it. Then, obviously, it went off TV for a while. Then, obviously, when a certain wrestler jumped ship and went over, I'm not going to mention his name because I'm always getting in trouble for mentioning his name too often, but you know who it is, went over. That's when I kind of really, 97, 98, I really got to see a lot of these characters in the height of it, you know what I mean? The Jerichos, the DDPs, these people that I'd never seen before. The first time I remember seeing Benoit, I was just like, holy shit, this is Dynamite Kid reincarnated, you know? And I just, that's what brought me. That's how I knew. I was going into school telling guys, because I was probably 13, 14, and I going into school telling guys, lads, you love the WWE, you want to see these guys. And I was kind of copying my VHS tape, because I had the two tape recorders, so you could, you know, bootleg it. Yeah, you could bootleg it.
That was the only way you could do it, because Nitro eventually was on Bravo. Do you guys remember Bravo? It was on on Bravo and the station before Bravo, and that's how it was. But that was near the end. That was like 2000, 2001, when they would repeat Raw on the Friday at the same time as Nitro. And that's how I watched the last year. But up until then, the only way you could do it was just VHS bootlegging. Even over here.
Well, the way I got it,
long distance. Sorry, go on.
The way I got it over here in 98 was I had an uncle who was lucky enough to have the old satellite TV. So he actually had, you know, the old dish up on the house. So he actually had TNT, which came on at 9 o'clock after the Cartoon Network.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'd buy like a 6-pack of VHS tapes, and he'd record like say a month's worth of Nitro for me on the Friday night, because it was always shown on the Friday night as well at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So every 2 weeks to a month, I'd go out, get my big collection of tapes, come back, go to Power Slam and order the old VHS for the pay per views. If you remember old Power Slam, you used to be able to order the WCW videos. You probably get them about 4 months later after the pay-per-view happened, but didn't give a shit, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. So it's Different world. Like, it's when you go back and think about it, you're really like, it really is amazing. You really had to work to be a wrestling fan.
We're nearly back in that world now.
Yeah. Yeah. We have the internet at least, you know.
Yeah, I recorded today for Dynamo's Dozen with Finlay Martin, actually, from PowerSlam, and we were only talking about that, saying, like, it's crazy that people, you know, some people are complaining, you know, oh, with the lack of wrestling, the lack of this, you know, not understanding the big picture that it's for a reason. And, you know, the two main companies now, WWE and AEW, are, you know, they are in a position now where they have to do what they're doing, and they're still getting content out there. But share a thought for a lot of the independents out there now who are literally making absolutely nothing, you know what I mean? Yeah. I was talking to Jordan Devlin there last night, and, you know, he's just basically stuck at home. He's going to be on tonight on NXT UK, so everyone should check that out. But so I do think it's important to kind of, you know, if you're someone that is a fan of kind of indie wrestling, you go to your favorite indie shows around the world, try and help them out in some way, shape, or form. I don't know, buy a T-shirt, something. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Because the big boys, they're okay. They're going to be paid either way. So just thought I'd throw that in there, lads, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
One of the big things, guaranteeing money. That was one of the downfalls of WCW and contract control. So, yeah, it ties in. You know, lessons weren't learned from
where did, what actually, brought down. Noel, what do you think about that? Actually, I'll put this one to Carl and Noel, actually, because that's a really good point, Dara. Guaranteed money, good or bad? Or was it a bit of both back then? Do you think? What do you think it did in terms of shaping the business as it is today, I guess?
I think really it was down to individuals, really, when you look at it, you know what I mean? Because I think if you look at, say, guaranteed money. Kind of it can be kind of an in. So, like, if you think about it, I think, take for example, we're talking about Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit having guaranteed money. I don't think that would affect them that much, because those two boys went out every night and gave 100%.
Yeah.
But I think some guys with guaranteed money, I presume some sort of laziness will creep in, because you're guaranteed. So what's going to stimulate you? You know what I mean? And you could see it even towards the tail end of it with some of the factions and all. Some elements of those factions would have been getting carried.
Yeah. I think guaranteed money, in my opinion, doesn't always guarantee success, you know, because some of them, as Noel just rightly pointed out there, they will coast, you know what I mean? Some of them. Like, you look, the perfect example was Hulk Hogan. If he didn't want to fucking do something, he didn't do it, like, you know?
Yeah.
So, whether it, even if it didn't progress the storyline or whatever, I don't know. But, you know?
Well, that's kind of what I was alluding to, you know? Like, if you're guaranteed money and, say, you're Billy Kidman, that's very different than being guaranteed money and you're Hulk Hogan.
Absolutely.
I would say guaranteed money doesn't guarantee success. Yeah, it doesn't guarantee effort or incentive. Incentive, that's the one. Because, you know, if you're, as you said, if you're Hulk Hogan and you're guaranteed X amount of $1 million, yeah, you're going to show up, do the leg, and then that's it, right? But if you're Kidman, you're like, cool, I don't need to focus on where we're going. I can just focus on this. So, yeah, it was just never thought out correctly. But, again, they were trying to buy out or keep people from jumping ship. They were trying to control as many people. It's basically what WWE are doing now, by holding on to guys for the sheer purpose of holding on to them so they won't jump to AEW. That's kind of what's going on now. And you've seen it. Guys just sitting there doing nothing. Or back in catering, you know, rather than giving the opportunity.
It ruins wrestlers. It ruins their passion. It ruins their want to progress their character, I think, as well. You know?
I think the problem is when you've signed that amount of people, you know, if you're just signing guys for the sake of signing them, you know what I mean? As opposed to, like, signing guys where you have a plan for them. You know, like, WWE, with all the content that it puts out, it doesn't have enough room for everyone that it has signed. It just simply doesn't.
No.
You know, if you want to get a quality product out there, you know.
I would dare chime in there on that one and say it's generational as well. I don't think a lot of today's workers have the same mentality of yesterday's workers. You know what I mean? In the sense that, you know, you had the likes of a Jericho or a Guerrero who were probably on, at that time in 98, I think it was around 300 to 400,000 per year, which was still a lot of money. But if you think about, that was before taxes, and that wasn't taken into account travel and stuff like that. So the take-home pay was probably still more than your average Wendy's worker or whatever it may be. But at the same time, they still wanted to get to a certain level. They still wanted to steal the famous Vince McMahon line. They still wanted to reach for that brass ring. Same in WWE. I mean, you had in 1997, I dare say, you had Shawn, Brett, Steve Austin. They all had their best work when Shawn and Brett were probably on the best money of their career at that time. But they were still, you know, producing some of their best work. Now you've got your Kenny Omegas and your Young Bucks who think that they're already superstars because it says All Elite in the title. But they're not actually doing that to progress their characters or try and get over to a new audience. You know what I mean?
The main thing there, that's a good point. It's basically got to do with the mentality that AEW always believe that they're already better because there's no competition. Right?
Yeah.
WWE are the behemoth and you can't knock them over. But AEW have this support because they're desperately looking for competition. And look, they're doing a better job than Impact did, than TNA did, which is, you know, huge in and of itself. But I don't know, like, it's... AEW is very like WCW more than, scrappy WWF.
I think what we're talking about, though, is it's the same, like, you'd recognize the same situation in any business. In any business you look at where there's, like, 300, 400, 500 staff, you're going to have certain staff members that rise to the top and want to be promoted and want to further themselves in their careers. And then you've guys that are happy to be there to just walk in, pick up the check, do the 9-to-5 and go home. So it's not exclusive to wrestling. It's the same in any big organization that you would look at. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, you're in a situation where not everyone can be world champion. Not everyone can be the CEO of a company, you know, but some can. And I think we've the same thing in wrestling. Well, we probably need to bring it back to Nitro and Raw now, do we? Because we're getting a bit sort of sidetracked.
It's a good segue. I mean, but then going on to, I guess, Niall, touching on the NWO, I think was to kick up the bollocks that WWE needed in a lot of ways, because obviously then off the back of that, you start seeing the Nation of Domination come into the fore with the likes of Farouk, and it was all the black guys. Then you had the Hart Foundation. They were kind of the heels in the United States, but the baby faces everywhere else around the world. And then, of course, DX came off the back of the Hart Foundation then. So, I mean, the two big factions, I guess, during the 97 period then probably would have been the Hart Foundation and the DX. And that was some of the best work. I think it was probably Michael and Brett's best promo work ever, to be fair, I would say, because they weren't always known for being great promo guys. But it was definitely their best work. So you got to see a lot of great storylines in WWE then off the back of that. And then obviously off the back of that, your stars like Stone Cold came out, The Rock broke away, I think that was WWE being put in a position where they had to basically try new talent and push them, whereas WCW were getting great stars like Jericho, who was a great mic man, Booker T, Diamond Dallas Page, but they were sticking with the old guys in terms of these young guys were never going to get a chance to rise to the top, where WWE were doing it and they were in a position where they had to push these new guys financially. They had to. So I think there are two very key and important aspects of what happened for WWE off the back of having to react to Nitro's success.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. Like, it was. Let's not fool ourselves. If Vince was able to hold on to Hogan, to Razor, to Nash, and to all the guys from that period of time, they would have never left. They would have never left. And that's the main thing. Like,
Yeah, I agree. You would have never had any kind of issues with a, you know, everyone that you would have seen at the top of WCW. You'd have had no screw jobs. You'd have had no kind of, probably no Stone Cold Steve Austin's. It's a crazy time when you think of happenstance. Like, it really did kind of, happenstance was purely what happened with the likes of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Do you know what I mean? Especially Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It's strange when you go back and look at it, because it only takes like one thing to shake that foundation and start that ripple effect to happen.
Yeah,
you know, and it's amazing. Yeah. Like, as these guys started leaving and going to WCW, the ripple effect that it had. Although WCW was winning the ratings war and all from some of the stuff they were doing and all, it's amazing what came out of it. Like,
yeah,
when you go back and look at it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, I suppose when you go to 1998, then that should have been the year when WCW got even stronger, because obviously people thought after, you know, Montreal, they thought that was it for WWE, done. Everyone was going to leave, blah, 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 this was that. Actually, quite the opposite happened. Brett goes to WCW, which should have been the coup of the century at the time, should have been the hottest, you know, commodity in wrestling. Which he probably was, and Bischoff basically pays him to do nothing and sit beside Hogan. And that was just one. The reason I'm using that example is because it's so high profile, and at the time it was. You know, you sign a guy to a $3 million a year contract, and you have him basically standing beside Hulk Hogan and do nothing. It should have been the opposite.
The reason for that was because a lot of the problems that were in WCW were systemic and it reached a 10.
Yeah.
So, right, by 1998, you had the Goldberg explosion, right? And it only got
Which
so
was
far.
Great, yeah.
Which was great, yeah, but it hit a point where Hogan, Nash, and the rest of the lads were like, you know what, this is my spot, I want it back. And then they screwed it up.
Yeah.
You know, within a year, it was absolute garbage. You know, they had thrown everything away. They built up the stars, but then went right back. And it wasn't because they were booking it that way. It wasn't like they were because the creative team were booking it. It's because the lads who wanted it were the creative team. They booked themselves to be the top lads, you know? And
the inmates running the asylum.
That was it, yeah. So, like, when you're watching 1998, in theory, you're like, right, they have WWE on the ground. They have taken their biggest stars. They have a lot of momentum coming off it. But instead of taking that momentum, they put themselves in charge. And the knock-on effect of that as well is, going back to what we said with the Cruiserweights, those lads knew it. And they're like, well, look, we need to get out of here because this is not going anywhere. Jericho left a year later.
Sorry, just imagine being a Jericho or a Benoit walking into those creative meetings.
So you can read his book. You can read Jericho's book. He talks about it, and you're like, "This is what it's as bad as it sounds," you know.
But just imagine showing up every week to go into that meeting for creative, like, and the boys are all sitting at the top table, probably fat stacks of cash in front of them, laughing.
Yeah, that was it, you know. And again, like, it was, that's all it was, you know. There was no reason for WCW to close. There was no reason to decline as far as it did so fast. But it was because all the problems that were there basically just collapsed when all the main workers left and people lost interest.
Well,
it was savaged by greed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In every aspect, not just money.
Didn't a couple of the guys say that, like, they used to show up to Nitro, you know, off the back of a storyline the previous week or being told that they had a storyline, only to kind of fly all the way from, say, Charlotte to, I don't know, Washington, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, you're actually off tonight. We've nothing for you. And you're like, okay. And these guys just went home then. Like, Brett's a perfect example, actually. He said, you know, they're just like, yeah, we don't have anything for you tonight, so bye-bye. So you got a guy earning $3 million. Just...
I was just going to say, I did.
And
just imagine, in terms of Brett, this is a guy who's just after being, like, absolutely screwed over. And he wanted to go somewhere to prove a point, to go out there and show his best work and want to work every night and put himself back out there. And he's just getting tortured again. Imagine how he must have felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting paid $3 million just to do nothing.
Yeah, but imagine the likes, when you look at the likes of Brett and Benoit and Guerrero and all those guys, Jericho, that we talk about, it wasn't really about the money. It wasn't always about the money. Those guys wanted to go out and perform. They wanted to be 100% every night. They wanted to go out there and, you know, show people their craft and everything. You know what I mean? Like, the check took care of itself.
Yeah, you know? It was more a desire to be seen as the top guy and to prove it to themselves. And that's just one thing that, you know, you can see it in the work. But then at the top of the card, the guys who were given the opportunity were taking the piss. You know, storylines about Scott Hall being a drunk, literally being drunk on thing, you know, stuff like this. And that's not even talking about the big ones like the finger poke of doom. And, you know, these are all things that it was coming for years. And then by 1999, it was too much.
The only thing I'd say about that group, though,
is the pivotal year.
Yeah, but the only thing I'd say about it as well is, I'd say a lot of those guys had a kind of, those guys who you're talking about, they all had a vision there, and they seen that this wasn't going to last forever. So they were going to take whatever they could, and then they knew they were going to just shoot back to Connecticut.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was it. You know, it's like, and you think about it, like, you know, I said at the time, but similar thing happened, like, what, 10, 12 years later with TNA, where same lads came in and derailed that company too. Lessons weren't learned. You know, and only now are we finally been able to be like, right, well, you know, maybe having wrestlers who have a track record of ruining it shouldn't put them in charge, because that's a bad idea. And, you know, only someone like McMahon can actually control that, because no one overrules Vince McMahon. And that's why WWE is, for bad or worse, it's always WWE.
Yeah, that's why they're still there, it's because it's one voice, one, and that's it.
Yeah.
No wrestler should be in charge.
No. Yeah, well, no active wrestler anyway. Definitely, if you're on the show, don't book yourself, because you're always gonna.
Yeah.
Even if you don't mean to, like, best case scenario, even if you don't mean to book yourself as the top guy, you're still kind of going to do it. Like, look at Jeff Jarrett. You know, I like Jeff Jarrett a lot, but he still did it. And Cody Rhodes is, you know, still doing it now. And as you said, what you were saying about AEW with the lads there, they're all booking it. And they still position themselves in a way that they look pretty damn good. So it is what it is, you know.
Well, I'll give you an example, guys. Right, the reason WCW worked in 94 up to 98 was because they had a booker in Kevin Sullivan who was very, very underrated, but he didn't have an agenda, because Kevin Sullivan was a veteran, obviously. Championship wrestling side of things, great worker, great mind for the business. I know there was a lot of kind of hokey stuff that they had too, but look, there's been plenty of hokey stuff in WWE too.
It's wrestling.
Don't forget, they had a hockey player. It's wrestling.
It's wrestling. But, right, wrestling's going to be goofy by its nature. Like.
Exactly. But Kevin Sullivan was the key component in there, because he didn't have an agenda. He was very rarely on television in 97, 98 anyway. His last kind of big program at the time, I think, was with Benoit, but that was over Mormon, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was a cool angle too, and you know, it made sense. But Kevin Sullivan was really the glue that kept the show itself going in terms of the booking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Soon as Nash and people like Nash, I mean, let's be fair, Nash knows about the actual wrestling business other than how to make money from the Kevin Nash side of things, and the proof is in the pudding, because anything he's ever touched other than his own gimmick has turned to shit when he's had the pencil, you know what I mean?
Some people are going to say that you know, oh, the NWO was great, and I think we should be like, right, look, the NWO was great.
Yeah.
But it got out of hand. And I know if we don't say that, people would be like, oh, you know, but the NWO, you know, it brought the, it won the war for them for a time. Like, where do you stand on that?
Well, I think the NWO was really that roller coaster that eventually ran out of track.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so while you're on that one, while you were on that roller coaster, it was fantastic, and it was buzzing, and it was cool, and it gave you that sort of, you know, that pop inside and stuff like that. But once you run out of track, it's over.
Well, Noel, you know? I'll say it to you. You're talking about now, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but let's be real and be honest. Two of the components of NWO was Nash and Hall, who were basically completely, to use an Irish phrase, Mayfainers. To all you American listeners,
but you got to remember, at a time when they were originally pushing the NWO, at those times when it was hot as hell, was really when WCW was entering into what we call that entertainment business now.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
that's why it worked so well. So you didn't necessarily, you know, we call it entertainment now, even, you know what I mean? So how much of it?
Oh, no, just I understand. But the point that I'm making is that two of these guys, the reason it did fall on its arse eventually was because you had Nash and Hall, who were two guys who, don't forget, in WWE only wanted to work with their friends anyway. They wanted to get rid of all the rest of the locker room and just work with their little circle. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, but
it was
always
going to fall.
Yeah, but I think whatever you think about Nash, I think Razor was still a very good worker. And I think he probably had a lot more to offer. But I think what happened was, because of the whole Kevin Nash influence, I think it kind of went the wrong way.
Well, I think Scott Hall, I've heard Bischoff actually saying that Scott Hall did actually have a great mind for the business and could have been a great booker. The problem was it was just the bottle didn't allow him to do so, unfortunately. And look, that's not something to be condemned on this show. Do you know what I mean? That can happen to the best of people. So that's just unfortunate circumstance there. Like,
but I'd say as well, just not only are they Mayfainers, but to use another Irish expression, Nash's knees were knackered. So there's very few things that he could actually do. Like, Razor was a better worker, obviously. And it's weird when you look back at his career where he just kind of stopped, you know. But that's a different topic. But what I mean is, like, Nash was in bits by that point anyway, and he was being pushed as a world champion. He had one of the worst world champion runs in WWE and in WCW. But, you know, he was given the book, so why not? You know, destroyed Goldberg, after a year build in the most ridiculous way possible. And it's just like, you know, everything that they had, everything, every reason to just steamroll WWE, and they didn't. And it's important to remember, WWE, all they did was just take what WCW were doing, change it slightly, and then adapt to it, and that's how they won.
Let's get on to WWE a little bit here now, actually, just to keep it on the Monday Night Wars. I couldn't agree more with you. They were Mayfainers, and they did. I mean, as I said, they were part of a group of backstage guys that were complete politicians, and eventually their politics caught up with them because they went back to WWE, where their friend was in a position to keep them in a job. They couldn't even keep a job with their best friend in there because of their antics. You know what I mean? So it just shows you what kind of guys, obviously, behind the scenes, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall are, other than taking away their work. All they're really good for now is a yearly kind of appearance on the Hall of Fame in some way, shape, or form. So
yeah,
that's my opinion. It's always entertaining. Yeah, you're always wondering, is someone going to show up drunk? I mean, Kevin Nash still drinks in front of Scott Hall. What the hell does that tell you?
That's meant to be best friends.
You know what I mean?
But before we jump,
yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Shit gets real, right? Because this is when stuff gets mad. So we're jumping from 1997, 98, 1999, right? That's where we stopped at WCW. There's a massive change around the end of 1999, which you will have to talk about because stuff gets crazy. But I just want to kind of park that there because we're not done with WCW yet. We can't be. That's unfair. Sorry, go back.
No, I agree. I know Flair was the president at one point, so we've got to talk about that. But in terms of WWE, obviously in 1998, are really kind of coming into their own. You've obviously got Austin wins the title at WrestleMania against Michaels, with Tyson in there. Not the best match, but in fairness, Michaels did work hurt and still gave his all. So I don't think the match is as bad as some people portray it to be. I still think it's quite nice. It's maybe by Michael's standards, it's not his best. But in terms of what that brought us into the era, obviously, of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And Steve Austin just absolutely steamrolled the merch stands, steamrolled everything. You know, that had only been matched, I guess, by the rock and wrestling era, and probably even top that too, depending on who you listen to. But WWE obviously just go from strength to strength then in 1998 and literally capitalize on all of Nitro's downfalls, of WCW's downfalls, should we say. And through that, we also get The Rock then as well.
Yeah, I mean, two of the best of to ever lace up the boots in terms of, I think, having a good mix of character and movesets as well, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, the big name.
You, Carl, go ahead.
I was going to say, two of the biggest names that you think of in this time, along with, like, you know, this is when we started seeing the real We from the Chaff. It's an interesting experience to go back and watch WWE from 1997 to 1998. But the end of 1998, it's a different product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think, Carl, what you touched on there as well, like, you know, it would have been, you know, for our American listeners, I guess it's like the analogy would be like it's Michael Jordan and LeBron James around at the same time. In football terms, it's like Messi and Ronaldo, which is what we have now. The Rock and Austin, it's just like they're two generational superstars that break out in the same year at the same time, one a little younger than the other, but both kind of had their trials and tribulations, obviously, years before that in very, very different kind of ways. We had Die Rocky Die chanted to Stone Cold getting fired via fax when he was stunning Steve Austin. So both kind of, as I say, through very, very different paths, make it to the top. Obviously, Austin coming through the last days of the territory system, the USWA, then making it to WCW. Then, you know, we see a little bit of the Stone Cold in the old ECW vignettes that he does while he's hurt. Paul Heyman getting the best out of Austin there. And obviously, you know, The Rock obviously just... Oh, amazing promos. And then you just see, obviously, The Rock was just purely a product of WWE off the back of who his family and see a football player. Very similar to Roman Reigns, I guess, in a lot of ways. But different animals completely, you know. It was just a crazy time for WWE. They had that. And then, obviously, they were pushing... I think in 1998, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but obviously Taker is still pretty over there. He's kind of got the Ministry of Darkness kind of deal going on. And then I think Triple H then obviously is coming into his own, breaking away from the whole Sean's Shadow type thing. So there's four guys that I've mentioned actually in WWE. Taker, H, Rock, Austin. Guys... Yeah. Enlighten me. Come on. Enlighten me on that. Like, it's crazy.
Well, you could add to that as well, like, they had a better announce table. They had a better ring announcer. You know, they had so many other elements as well, apart from the actual performers. Like, you had, what was it, King and JR?
Penzer wasn't a good ring announcer? David Penzer is a fine announcer. David Penzer was a fine ring announcer.
he was now Howard Finkel.
He wasn't. Yeah. But yeah, go ahead. I'm only teasing.
Yeah. Well, I think there was just other... Go ahead, Kurt.
I was just going to say, I think that, WWF or whatever had the perfect... Like, I know that WCW was more of a wrestling show, like we've been saying. But I do think that when they really got it right, they had that perfect mix of... a good storyline and good wrestling, I feel, you know. And that's mainly why I kind of didn't really go near WCW, really, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, there's still, to not like, I mean, we've obviously pointed out WCW's faults. Now, I wasn't watching a whole lot of WWE back then because I was obviously on the WCW ship, but at the same time, I still went over and watched a bit, and I've obviously now, since in research for this pod, I've gone back and watched. We still had the Vinny Russo, buddy boy Vinny Russo, who actually I genuinely like now. To be fair, he's always nice to me nowadays, so I've nothing bad to say about him now. But at the same time, as much as we can kind of praise WWE, at the top echelon, you also had Naked Miz. You also had Naked Midian. Was it Midian? Yeah. So we had a lot of absolute literally garbage thrown in there as well. We had porn stars wrestling for WWE like Val Venus. There was lots of crazy stuff going on in WWE as well there, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, don't forget, they were coming out for really, like, before the Attitude Era was, you know, when, like, there was a really bad period for them. So just coming back out with that, I suppose some of that was still there. And the way I look at it is, I mean, WWEF had to change through necessity. And it was all down to WCW doing what they were doing, you know?
I think from WWE's point of view as well is when you throw that amount of craziness at the wall, it's not all going to stick. You know?
Yeah.
It's mad. And then you had a guy like Vince McMahon at the top.
I mean, very...
like, just crazy.
Well, you had we can't mention these Monday Night Wars without actually talking about Vince Russo because he's part of both sides on this one, which Dara kind of, as he said, we placed WCW on the shelf, which we're going to come back to a little bit later on. But for better or for worse, Vince Russo will take credit and will also take stick both from himself and both from the media on what he is and isn't to blame for. Anyone that's done the research will know that Vince Russo was obviously part of the Attitude Era, okay?
Yeah.
There's no denying that. What's always in question is just how much of a role he had there. It is quite clear that he was writing all of the shows, and obviously Vince McMahon was the filter there. It does sound as well like he's also a little bit of a scapegoat for the bad stuff too, and yet doesn't seem to be praised too much these days for a lot of the good stuff. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, I
think it's fair.
Yeah,
I mean, so we have to kind of give Vince Russo a lot of praise for a lot of the stuff here.
What I'd say is contained praise, right? We've seen what Vince does when he has no one, when Vince puts his show on, right? We've seen that for the past 10 years in WWE, right? We have seen what Vince Russo does when he's allowed to do what he wants. And we've seen it in WCW when we saw it in TNA. Now, as someone who loves TNA and always will, and I saw what he did to that product, you know, I'm going to be a bit biased, right? But, you know, so contained praise. He did a lot of really good stuff in the Attitude Era, and he's responsible for it. You know, he basically made The Rock's career. He also gave loads of guys who never would have been given a shot, he gave them a gimmick, and he really wanted to put the young fellas over, you know, and he did that, right? However, then it goes mad.
Yes.
When he's allowed to do whatever he wants, he goes absolutely crazy, and it's everything at the wall. But one thing that he did come up with, he came up with the successful format for wrestling, right? Well, I'm not talking like wrestling, I mean like mainstream cultural zeitgeist wrestling. He came up with it. It needs to be relevant. Yeah. Wrestling's never been relevant since the Attitude Era.
Yeah. Right?
And that's because he tapped into it. The perfect mix of entertainment, you know, a little bit of risque stuff, and then an in-ring product, right? Like, really leaning hard into that soap opera for men. That's what he kind of came up with in a real way, and it tapped into all these other things. So he's responsible for that. But it's a shame that he turned his legacy by going to WCW and then smash his legacy into the ground by going to TNA. And that's my thoughts on it, lads.
Yeah, I can't even...
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. I mean, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here, and I guess I'll play devil's advocate, and I'll just sit on Team Russo for a moment, okay? So just humor, you know, initially when we heard all of the dirt sheets, and, you know, one thing we know nowadays is to never, ever listen to Dave Meltzer and a lot of the guys that go with him, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of those little fucking... I don't know what you call them, but just little vultures that will just cling on to something and ruin the reputation of either a worker, a backstage guy, or whoever it may be. And they'll create a lot of false narrative. A lot of the stuff they might get right, but they're a little bit like Nostradamus. They write a million things in the hope that they are going to get one thing right, you know? So it's very much like a writer, like you said. It's throwing shit at the wall and hoping something will stick. Now in the age of where some of these guys like Bischoff and Russo who kind of get condemned quite a lot and have done over the years, they now have a voice, they have podcasts and stuff, and you hear their sides of things. Now whether what their side of things is any more accurate than say a Dave Meltzer, I don't know, but at the same time it is a different story, so I'm sure there's some believability in some of it too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, just on that point, before we get off it, like, as someone who's been in the wrestling media directly, like, I know you've been in the ring, Ian, so you're coming at it from a performer standpoint, but from coming at it from a journalist standpoint, you don't run stuff that isn't true Meltzer's running a business, like a business that survives solely on that, and a lot of the dirts do that too. You know, like, there's loads of dirts and they'll pump stuff out and they'll keep going because that's their business model. If you're looking at it with journalistic integrity, well, then you're not going to have that. You know, I know when we were running stuff, we were working for stuff, we would never publish anything that wasn't true or that we couldn't verify. You know what the good thing to do is? Ring the guys. Hey, is this true? Yeah. No, don't run it. You know, to be honest with you, it's a lot easier to verify this stuff than otherwise. And it's not done. Like, I don't know Dave Meltzer, I don't know the lads from Figure Four, but their business model is, if it bleeds, it leads. So, you know, that's just the way it is.
But verifying stuff in this day and age doesn't really work, because no one really cares about verifying stuff. They just want to throw stuff out there to get hits and clicks and likes and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's
whether it's true or not is irrelevant.
But that's my point. Well, that's, you know, if that's your model, then, you know, that's what you're going to get.
Dara, I'm a big fan of journalism and good journalism. There's countless you know, workers, backstage staff, everything over the years that have said Meltzer's full of shit. He's as you say, he runs a business, but he runs it on a story that he hears.
Yeah.
Blah. He doesn't verify it quite clearly. Okay. Yeah. He makes up this, and I understand he's made money from it. He has this weird star rating system that he concocts and people go off it, which I don't understand why people let it bother them anyway, because it's one man's opinion. If he thinks Kenny Omega is 20 stars, let him. That shouldn't really annoy you. Do you know what I mean? It shouldn't really ruin your day. Because it doesn't ruin mine, you know? But the point I'm making is there's a lot of great journalists. Like I said, Finn Martin of PowerSlam PowerSlam was an absolutely fantastic magazine, which I'm sure we'll all agree here. And someone who never really... Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Finn always said to me, basically, he didn't really print stories himself that weren't true. If you look at the old sections, it was always rumor has it that this is the case. And it was always a rumor section. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's fine.
And rumors are fine. Rumors are fun. Rumors are fun. But
exactly.
But look, the problem is people don't verify stuff themselves. People don't use their desertion. So that's the whole job of the media, to be like, look, this is the story, this is what's going on. And I know from doing stuff, you could, like, when I was working with WrestleView, the lads in Wrestleview, you could just email someone in WWE and go, hey, is this, and then they'd write you back. It was easier with TNA to be like, yeah, no, that's not true. You know, and it's just, you know, that would be it. And then you'd read it online, you're like, what is going on here? But people don't use their discernment, and it's something we're never going to get over. It's the man is synonymous with it. But as I said, you know, everything's a work in wrestling, and that includes the media sometimes. So discernment, use it.
I think the problem is if you make enough of those calls trying to verify everything, you're going to end up with nothing to write.
But that's it, you know. And one of the rules that we'd operate in Restaview was we'd wait. You know, you wouldn't get the Brocken news, but you get the right news. You know, and even with the Sun and stuff as well, we'd be like, hey, we do on a press release. So it'd be, you know, and in my opinion, I was always someone who would like, right, let's write something that actually is people that's correct rather than it's bullshit. Because if you start known as someone who writes bullshit, no one takes you seriously. So look, but that's everyone's prerogative. And Meltzer now, he's getting that reputation where the lads are like, nah, this is all crap. And eventually that'll tank your business. You know, like, look, we still have respect for Finn Martin. Someone whose magazine has been out of print for a couple of years now, but because of that body of work he still has, he can stand over that. Meltzer can't.
Yeah, very, very, very good points. Very good points. And exactly. I agree. Now, the thing is, as I said, I didn't want to spend too much on Dave Meltzer. However, in fairness, he is an important part of the wrestling business because of you know, he was the reporter over the years. But what I'm saying is nowadays you're getting a lot of guys that didn't have a voice back in the day. The Bischoffs, the Russos. Bischoff and Russo hate each other, but they both agree on the same bullshit that Dave Meltzer was spewing out. So what I'm saying is a lot of these journalists would have had you believe that at a certain period in time that Vince Russo was nothing to deal with the Attitude Era. So that's the point I'm making. And now we're kind of doing this podcast on fact. And we're doing it on fairness as well. And I think Russo obviously goes to WCW then in 1999. But at that time, trying to heal an already dead animal. Because if you go back, which I have done, as I say, I don't comment on stuff that I don't do research on. I went back and I watched, the first, say, 3 months of when Russo goes in to WCW, and yeah, he's trying to use the stars that aren't being utilized. I mean, A, he's giving Brett a push. He's finally putting Brett in pictures with, and it's probably his only good work in there. And he's giving the likes of Booker T a push. He's bringing the likes of Jeff Jarrett involved, and the first kind of say month or two is actually pretty good, and it's looking pretty good for WCW. But there was just so much backstage politics then, and not even just backstage in terms of the company itself, but with Turner Broadcasting, because they were obviously going through the merger. So I think that obviously had a big part to do with it as well. But obviously people will remember the stuff. Jarrett and Hogan isn't good either, though. So
yeah. Well, the freight train was off the rails at that point. You know, and this is what I was saying to earlier on. It reached a tipping point that no matter what they did, Christ himself could come down and try to have saved WCW, and it wasn't going to happen because it was already gone beyond any salvageability. And then when the Turner was like, here, we don't want Turner Warner merger was happening, like, we don't want wrestling anymore. That was it. It was done, you know. Yeah. But it you know, once that tipping point happened, and that tipping point is when Jericho was lost, Benoit was lost, and that was like, there's nothing of value here. And there wasn't, because at the end of it, it was valued at like $2 million, and Vince bought it for that. You know, it dropped from a multi-million dollar corporation to nothing, to pennies. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the truth of it. Like, I feel bad for Russo for trying stuff. And with the new, as you said, we got some new stars, Booker T, some of the other stars, Bret Hart. But the whole New Blood thing in general, where they had the New Blood versus the Millionaires Club, that was a cool angle. But that angle should have been done 2 years before that.
I agree.
And obviously, it was too late.
And obviously Russo had been watching that product and said, yeah, this is what I would do. So I mean, essentially we're looking at it and saying, yeah, Russo did do a lot for you know, the Monday Night Wars and the world of wrestling. Carl and Noel, into this, not necessarily about Russo and Bischoff, but like, do you have any opinions on, because obviously they both eventually work for both companies, anything to throw in on that?
I think the reality was that Vince basically bought a library And I think that's what he was looking for, because I think at that stage when he was buying the company, most of the talent he wanted, he had probably already got. And that, whatever was left that he actually wanted, decided not to pursue it anyway. So that's why we didn't get Sting and various things like that, you know what I mean? But, I mean, the reality is, I think what happened was Russo went in there and he tried to create another attitude there, and he just didn't have the elements. He didn't have Vince there with the sense check, and he had Bischoff, who was an absolute lunatic. And they were just trying to do different things. And I think what happened from WWE's point of view is they had brought in a lot of those guys that it looked as if WCW had discarded them. So your Guerreros, your Benoits, all those type of guys, they had been brought in. But they were brought in like Jericho as well. They were all brought in as bona fide stars and made part of a big show. And they were made feel a big deal. Like, he pushed that talent in line with their ability straight away. And they were put right in there. Whereas, you know, just prior to that, they were sort of as being the discarded, not relevant people of WCW. And then he came into WWE and had a huge impact.
I think they also had a point to prove to WCW as well when they arrived in WWE. So when you got someone with that kind of hunger and determination, of course you're going to get better performances and better intensity and all that kind of stuff as well.
But I think more so than anything, I think they had a major point to prove to themselves. I think Chris and Eddie and guys like that, they had a major point to prove to themselves more so than anyone else. They wanted to say to themselves, like, we really believe we're a big part of this business still and we want to do this. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they didn't come in for the paycheck. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I agree with that. I think I'm kind of wrapping it up a little bit. We're getting to the, you know, to the tail end of WCW. Eventually, obviously, we know what happens. We know what the end game is. The Vince Russo and the Eric Bischoff experiment doesn't work. They make them work together. Just doesn't happen. Isn't gonna happen. I mean, the writing's on the wall for WCW from the powers that be anyway, from the financial side of things, and they're gonna pull the plug. Vince McMahon, who they've been in competition with, buys the company in a real low-key deal and meeting for $2 million, it's been rumored, for $2 million. So he buys basically the name WCW and the whole video library for just $2 million, which, you know, it's come out now that Stars, Ric Flair and all have said he would have bought it for that price if probably would have had to pay the tax man for the next 100 years rather than 20. But he ends up doing that. And it's,
that was it. Like, you know, and that's kind of the saddest part of this. Well, from which point of view? Like, it's cool that we have the network. It was really sad before the network came out because it was locked behind the vault and you never see it again. But it's just it's shame when they do like the documentaries and it's all negative towards WCW, and you're like, no, it wasn't like that at all, you know. And that's kind of sad.
I agree. It's like WCW were just the most inept company of all time in a lot of ways. Like, they weren't at one point. They were a really well run wrestling show. Fair enough, maybe behind the scenes they weren't watching the pennies, but they were certainly. You know, it's the biggest thing in wrestling, guys. And I mean, at the end of the day, the fact that we're talking about it now, how many years later?
19 years.
You know,
19 years after.
And you know, we're all older now, and we're still searching for that type of competition and that type of wrestling again. You know, I dare say if you put some younger stars that are in here now, like your Sammy Guevara's and your Kenny Omega's and Young Bucks and stuff, like, they would have either sank or swam back in that generation. And to be honest with you, with the attitude of a lot of the current stars today, they probably more than likely would have sank because they didn't have the mentality that that those elite guys, like, give you an example, Jericho at nearly 50 years old is putting more effort into his character than a lot of, you know, guys that are getting paid more money now than what they were getting paid back then, you know?
Can I just...
It's sad. Go ahead, Carl.
I just think the wrestler of that day compared to the wrestler of this era is a totally different animal. What's to totally, you know, I mean, they lived the wrestling lifestyle back then. Nowadays, mm-hmm. it's a means to an end, I think. Whereas they, I think, excuse me, they really believed in their character, in the direction it was going, you know. So it's a totally different time. It's a totally different beast, so to speak, you know. It's very hard to find, I think, characters who are comparable to some of the guys from WCW and WWF, you know. And the perfect example is Chris Jericho. Yeah. As you say, he's able to reinvent himself time and time and time again. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're there. They're there. It's just, I suppose, it's like the economical climate has changed. The way people do business has changed. You know, Vince used to give people a contract that was just guaranteed an opportunity, you know, with a downside of maybe £100 per show if they were called for a show. That meant you lit a fire. WCW... What I'm saying is WCW still had guaranteed contracts, but you still had guys working. So it's a case of, you know, are people as... You know, I still think the younger guys and girls nowadays are still as passionate in business as maybe some of the guys that have come before them. It's that they're not really required to have the same work rate, maybe, as the other guys did, because everything... There was no HR departments back then, put it that way. You couldn't really go and file a complaint about being bullied just because someone didn't like the way, you know. I think a lot of that has had to, the world has changed as well. And I think that's a lot to do with it. You know what I mean? We have I've been involved in locker rooms where, you know, where things have been said around me or blah, blah, blah. Where, you know, if that happened now, people would probably be looking for a HR department.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think when I look at it at the moment, I sort of think, wait, when you take all those guys out there at the moment that are wrestlers now, how many of them would still wrestle at the moment if they were getting paid $30 at a carnival?
Absolutely.
They wouldn't.
That's the point I tried to make. And I also think that, like, you know, when you look at those guys, you know, the guys that we revere, the likes of Jericho and Benoit and Guerrero, and I know they keep on coming up, but because it's WCW and WWE, they're kind of those key elements. And a theme of Lincoln guys like that. Their body of work speaks for itself. And I don't think their body of work would change much even today. I think they'll go out there, they'll give you what they give you, and it's what we've always wanted. You know what I mean? And I just think some people turn around and say, oh yeah, society evolves and everything else evolves. You know what I mean? Chris Benoit was never worried about selling t-shirts.
Yeah.
Chris Benoit was worried about going out there and giving 110% every night when he wrestled. And I think that's where it's gotten lost.
Yeah, that's
well,
true.
We look at Jericho, just to bring it back to Jericho for a bit. Mm. We talk about Jericho and people say, oh, Jericho's only in it for the money or blah, blah, blah. Absolute nonsense. When Jericho came back first and he reinvented himself, when he wore the suits and he was calling the fans sycophants, he actually went to the merch department and said he didn't want t-shirts sold because it would, you know, it would ruin.
It would ruin the character, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a very good point.
Absolutely.
Is he gone? This is what we call a Skypean death drop.
Alright.
Yeah. This is the downside of Skype. Around this time, it drops someone from the call.
We just future endeavored him.
Mr. Pro WCW.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
Yeah, but I think what I'm basically saying there is, wrestlers were seen as like carny folk, almost. You know, as in it was a lifestyle where they're athletes now, they're classed as athletes or sports entertainers. Whereas back then, they, as I said, they lived a lifestyle that was only really for them, you know?
Yeah, it was like you had to work all those times and you couldn't go home, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like now kind of like nearly, you know, if you have a kind of a wide, broad sort of group of people that you know, nearly one of them now is a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these are guys that we looked up to that were larger than life, and you know, they lived this lifestyle that was protected for so long, and business that was protected for so long. Now a couple of your mates do pro wrestling. And it's kind of like, it takes that kind of sheen off it. And not that they're bad or that they're good. I mean, they are whatever they are. You know what I mean? But it just, it kind of like, you know what I mean? It just, it kind of kills it a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think in a world when you can walk around Stephen's Green and run into Sheamus getting on the Lewis, as I did, that's a weird world to live in.
Yeah, and he would be a larger-than-life character. He's a big guy, and he's, you know, he's flamboyant, and he's out there, you know what I mean? But, like, you know when you bump into someone else walking down Grafton Street who was wearing, like, a Penny's T-shirt and a pair of jeans? Yeah. And, like, it's that guy as well, you know what I mean?
Fair, fair.
I remember a few years ago walking through O'Connell Street, and Fit Finlay was with his family. Just walking through. And I love Fit Finlay, you know. Now, I didn't bother going near him or whatever, but I was just like, there's Fit Finlay walking around around town. Not a bother to him, you know. And I did more of him just as much as some of the bigger lads, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like nearly the way social media has evolved and the internet and all that kind of thing. It's kind of humanized them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I suppose a lot of that has to do with merchandise and meet and greets and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Whereas years ago you would have never got that close. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like imagine meeting the Ultimate Warrior. You know, imagine meeting Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair or Eddie Guerrero or people like that, you know what I mean? At that time, they were amazing. You know what I mean? They were so far out there. It was nearly like wrestling was on a different planet.
Yeah.
You know pretty what much. I mean? That we just started tuned into every week.
It looks like our fearless leader has dropped off the conversation altogether.
And I can't get him back on.
We'll keep going for a few more minutes, I think. Can I just bring it back to the Monday Night War for a minute, if that's all right with everybody?
Yeah.
And I'm going to kind of use a little bit of my kind of pet podcast and style here. What are your favorite moments from both shows during the Monday Night Wars? If you have one of each show, lads.
Noel,
you go first.
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, the evolution of The Rock and all and stuff like that was fantastic. You know, Austin, obviously, being propelled into that position with the, you know, the beer bash and all that crazy stuff. DX doing the invasion and Nitro, all that kind of stuff was amazing. And, you know, to me, that was unbelievable, you know. It was just crazy. And when they started going down that path of that DX invasion where they were really going at each other, that to me was just unbelievable. Like, you know, that like, you know, it'd be like, how would you compare it to today? Someone from Facebook rolling down the street and showing up at Twitter in an army jeep or something like that. I go, we're here to take over. You know what I mean? Or Facebook showing up at Google's headquarters in Grand Canal Dock there going, we're here to take over. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. And it's like, to me, that was just amazing, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Dara, what do you think?
The same kind of wavelength of it. I think the fact that this changed wrestling from what it was to what it could be, it was a whole new world, right? We had like the massive characters, like what's it? Personally, my favorite stuff from the Attitude Era was like the evolution of characters like Mick Foley, where we got to see all the forms of it, and that's just something you never would see, right? Like, if you're this guy, he's four different people, you know, that's crazy. But then they're four individually fleshed out characters doing their own thing and involved with different angles. The creativity of having the Boss versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? And he's back, welcome back in.
The old internet decided to attack me there and take me away, but sure, look.
It looks like he got blue screened and everything.
Uh-huh. Terrible, oh, man.
Telling you, that's the worst Skypean debt drop I've ever seen in my life. So fair play. But yeah, no, just to answer that question, Carl, like, yeah, like that was it. Like, I think the greatest legacy of the Monday Night Wars is the creativity to push what wrestling was to what it is. Because yeah. Like before that, you know, you'd have a couple of lads in the ring putting on these matches. The Monday Night Wars made it had to be something bigger, it had to be something better. So you had the evolution of actual characters rather than just, you know, WWE case, rather than just having job descriptions. You had these deep characters. And even someone like The Undertaker, the evolution of him from being one thing to being a satanic cult leader to being a biker. We got that in the space of like 5 years. It's crazy.
That was brilliant as well, yeah, I have to say.
But it also changed as well. I mean, we went from, well, I personally went from watching wrestling where you had that jobber system to watching wrestling where like all components of a match were relevant to you. Like, yeah. I remember even the night when the Radicals showed up, it was crazy. Like,
that was great.
It was just, it was unbelievable, you know what I mean? And it was just, these guys just showed up, you know what I mean? And it was just, to see those guys there, and it was just, and even the way that, like, you know, all of a sudden, that I hate calling it mid-card, because all the card is the show, but those guys in the central part of that sort of card, they all became so relevant. We all bought into Guerrero and Benoit and Malenko and all these guys. And kind of like the end of the show was kind of less relevant, because the good elements they picked up from WCW wasn't so much that top end. It was more that middle of the card that got fleshed out and became the body of the show.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it became so relevant.
And that's actually why, you know, the invasion angle failed near the end, because we'd already got the best from WCW at that point. It was WWF at that point, you know? Like, I'll never forget when Jericho showed up, Jericho's first debut. It was incredible. And then I'll never forget, like, his first appearance at SummerSlam, where he called it Summer Sham, and it was... he was cutting the promo on top of the lines then. I'm like, this is brilliant, you know? This is when wrestling was, like, untouchable for me. It was, you know, it was smack bang near the end of this.
But imagine those guys coming in at that time, I mean, given that ball to go out and do all that stuff after coming from a situation where they were like, you know, the bastard child of some family. You know what I mean? Yeah. All of a sudden they come in and they're going, you can do this and you can do this and you can go out there and do that. Like for Jericho and Benoit and Guerrero, they must be going, oh my God, we found the sacred place.
You know? Exactly.
It's unbelievable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, look at all the good stuff Eddie did in such a short period of time. And it was so good.
I was just going to say, we really got the best of them when they moved and they got to jump ship. We really did. And like what I was gonna say to you was the whole evolution of the rise of the Stone Cold character was, and even the things between him and McMahon was amazing for me. And like even when you look back at some of those times and you see the crowd, you see how into it the crowd is and how loud the crowd is. It's not like that anymore. You know what I mean?
No. But not now.
No.
Definitely not now.
But when you think about that time with Austin as well, like America was kind of going through a revolution at time where like everyone was dying to tell their boss to do it, but they couldn't because they were kind of trapped. So to see this guy coming out there going, giving him the two fingers and giving him all this in the middle finger and saying, yeah, this is how we're going to go. You know what I mean? People bought into that, and they probably bought into it more thinking like, this is what I'd love to do, but unfortunately I can't. But to see you do it, I can live vicariously through you doing it. You know, that kind of way.
But that was
it. The amount of times I got in trouble with authority in school, just purely because from listening to Rage Against the Machine and Steve Austin all in one, was just a bad combination for a young Kelly.
that's a thing we missed back then as well, isn't it? The music was so good and so important to it as well. Like, that's what I'm saying. When you go back and you look at it, they tapped into everything. They had the wrestlers, storylines, the announcer's desk, the play-by-play call, the characters. Everything just sort of meshed, went really, really well.
I'd recommend as well, kind of in closing this podcast, because this is going to be our longest one ever for sure, but in closing this up, I recommend, I'm sure you have all seen it, going and checking out recently on the network. It's actually really good because Niall, just off what you were saying there, they actually talk in depth about, and they break it down with actual video footage, the WrestleMania 13 match. And they actually show you how important, you know, the timekeeper was, the announce desk, everything that was just there for. Yeah. They just utilized absolutely everything. Do you know? Just creativity beyond creativity. And I think CM Punk is probably one of the last ones of this kind of generation that kind of utilized a lot of that, to be fair. I don't see that creativity as much anymore. And I'd love kind of young workers that are out there now to go and watch that interview and just look at two old veterans talking about something like this and let it strike a spark, because me as a 35-year-old man, it lit a spark in me. And I was saying, Jesus H. Christ, if this was available to me now at 18 getting into the business, who fucking knows what I could do? Do you know what I mean? And that's the way everyone should be looking at it. So I endeavor, you know, any young kind of wrestlers or guys or girls listening to this now, go and look, because I dare say that the females in wrestling now are the ones that are more passionate for this than a lot of the guys.
I agree there. Yeah, I agree there.
100%, because you see, I think they've replaced the guys. They're the 1998 guys now. You know,
I think they're probably more open to using everything that's available to them. Whereas the guys, it's more of an ego. Great. With the guys, it's probably more of an ego thing that you have to break down. With the girls, it's like, oh, I can use this, and this will further me, and that'll further me. And, you know, the guys are turning around going, oh, I don't need any of that. I'm all good.
Well, if you think they about it, they think about it for the exact same reasons as we had with the lads in WCW. It's like the male wrestlers are like, oh, well, I have this anyway. You know, I'm good to go. The female wrestlers are like, oh, wait, I can actually go and I'm going to prove that I'm the best in this card. And you can see it. Like, you watch NXT or you watch even the women on the main card now. They're going out and they're having the best matches the whole thing. Night after night.
As soon as I see Shayna Baszler come out and I see her getting into a thing. In fact, Shayna Baszler is at the bringing out the best in Becky Lynch again. I know we're going. But people were saying Becky Lynch was stagnating a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, her promos are great again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is
just
the girls
balance.
Are now playing, and the girls are doing it. But guys, we're getting off topic. I think we should close up now, because it's been a great, and I mean, we could go on for days with this one. I think we really could. But what a period in time! Great nostalgia here, actually, for me personally, to be able to go back and look. I mean, as I said, there's a lot of elements there that were in the past that can still be brought into the future, I believe. It just depends on the individual, I guess. That's the story today, isn't it? Depends on the individual.
That's true. Yeah. And the power of individuals to change things. You know, one or two elements could have changed all of this. We could be sitting here talking about WCW Starrcade or whatever, or, you know, instead of WWE WrestleMania every year is the big show, you know, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess that's that's the challenge for AEW, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it is. Shots fired. Yeah, 100%. But look, I know I'll always look on with good intent, and I'm sure next month we're gonna come back with something else that's going to be pretty cool, and go searching into the vault of wrestling's past and see if we can see if we can come up with anything. I know I would throw an individual character personally in the name for a whole show done on him would be Kurt Angle. So it'd be interesting to see, because he didn't get a whole lot of mention today, but hell, a big part of what came off the tail end of the Monday Night Wars as well.
So,
it would be cool to kind of, you know, have a show about some of these individual guys as well, and just talk about them. But it's been a pleasure as always. Hopefully the next time we do this will be in person again. We don't know how long this coronavirus, this COVID-19 is going to last. So hopefully, we're not doctors or preachers, so we're not going to start preaching to people what to do. If people aren't washing their hands or doing that, and well, Do you know what I mean? It's all we can do
is keep on pushing content out there and hope that people enjoy it and that it makes this painful period we're going through that a little bit easier.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And we might endeavor, we're not going to promise anyone anything, but we might endeavor to try and get the next show out maybe a little bit quicker if the powers allow us to try and get it out a little bit quicker. Because I know, speaking to a lot of people, I've said it on the latest podcast, I actually had a lot of the symptoms there about 2 weeks ago, hence why I didn't have, hence why there wasn't any Dynamo Dozens out. The latest Dynamo Dozens actually up, available now with the co-host Dara. It's all about the NFL draft for all you NFL fans out there. He's done it himself. The Finlay Martin one will be up next week, but that's why I was told to self-isolate. I couldn't do anything. So it can happen to anyone, guys. So the key is just to try and enjoy. But we're going to get a lot of content there. Well, definitely between the few podcasts. And Dara, why don't you let people know about your latest episode, actually, and where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, so if you want to reach me on Twitter, you go to @DaraWV, and that's a good way to connect with me directly. But to check out all the content that I'm pushing out, go over to nerdsnowmedia.com and you're able to find the whole host of shows we do there. The last show I did was myself and Carl. We talked about all the craziness that is going on at WrestleMania. It's changing by the day. Literally, since we talked about it yesterday, the performance center is closed. So it's like, what's going on? But
I don't even want to mention that topic.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we were talking about it as it was happening, and I said it's going to change, and it did. So that's over now. You can check it out on the social media or on Spotify or whatever over there.
I was supposed to be heading over there next Wednesday.
Oh, no.
WrestleCon, fan access, Hogan's Beach Shop takeover, the whole lot. I can't even look at wrestling right now in empty little arenas. I just can't look at it. Sick.
That's horrible, man. That's horrible. But that's it. That's the world we're living in, you know, and that's what all the topics are. So it's nice to go back and talk about something that isn't the whole world being on fire at the moment.
Yeah.
Exactly. Carl, you've got some content that is going to be dropping in the next couple of days as well.
I did my King Rose court there about 2 or 3 hours ago, and that's actually up already on Spotify and the usual Google podcasts and all that kind of stuff. So I'm talking to one of the guys from Organ Blender, who was a Galway death metal band. So anyone who's into metal and Irish metal, check it out.
That's it, guys. You heard it right. The name of the band is Organ Blender, so do not mistake them for a folk or jazz band. They are a metal band.
Or a character out of The Walking Dead.
Exactly. So check that out. And like we said at the start of the show, if you still want your products... If you want to sit at home in an empty room watching an empty arena WrestleMania, there's only one place that you need to go to get your shirts, and that's WrestleMania. So go to Facebook, check them out, send them a mail. You can get your stuff delivered. They will do their best. Niall himself will do his best to get that out to you. If you need more information on that, go to myself or go to Carl. Go to Dara, even he'll send you along the way.
On the right, do the best right I can.
And we'd be more than happy to help you out. More than happy to help you out. So, cool. Look, guys, it's been a pleasure again. Everyone stay safe. Everyone keep washing their hands. it's been a pleasure. And until next time, Dynamo is over and out. You all need your own taglines now because. People will think it's a Dynamo Dozen.
I'm all shopped now.
King Wo is off his throne.
Don't print lies.
Right, guys. Until next time.
Take care, lads.
Until next Cheers, time. Lads. If you have a small business, a band, need a t-shirt design, or just need a logo in general, then I'm going to send you to the right place. Peter Hart Graphics. It's the only place that you need to go. In fact, that sexy new Dynamo's Dozen logo, Peter Hart Graphics. That logo for the four Podmen, Peter Hart Graphics. Peter Hart Graphics specialize in logo designs that are tailor-made to fit your needs. In fact, the process is so quick and easy that they will send regular updates and provide three drafts within one week. All you need to do is go to Peter Hart Graphics on Facebook, Instagram, or find them on Twitter at Peter H Graphics, or alternatively, you can email peterhartgraphics@gmail.com. That's peterhartgraphics@gmail.com. And give a description of what kind of logo and design that you need. It's that easy, guys. Also, make sure to tell them that Dynamo sent you. Make the first step in getting the logo that helps your business get up and running today.